Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. I was reelected last night in my job as Virginia State Delegate, where I proudly represent the eastern half of the city of Alexandria and parts of Arlington and Fairfax counties. Thank you. But really, that's the least that happened last night. The absolute least. I didn't have an opponent. No Republican dares to run against me in my heavily blue progressive district. And frankly, I wouldn't mind if they did. I would love, I love to debate Republicans and bring it on. I actually had an email from a constituent, a Republican constituent. I have a few of them complaining that I didn't have opposition. I said, well, why don't you run? He was one of the ones who opposes my gun safety regulations. And I said, you could run and we could have a debate. Look, obviously everyone on this, watching me on Facebook, everyone listening on Progressive Voices, everyone listening in terrestrial radio across the country knows what happened last night. Virginia showed the way. Yeah. Virginia is the tip of the spear. The Virginia tidal wave, which is crashing across America, and also occurred in New Jersey, and also occurred, by the way, in Washington State, where they took back the Washington State Senate, thus making the entire West Coast blue, from California to Oregon to Washington State, Hawaii. I think Hawaii is so blue they don't even have a Republican in their legislature. I want to talk about why what happened in Virginia happened. If I sound tired, it's because I am. I've had 5 hours sleep in 3 days. I slept 3 hours before the election. I slept 2 hours last night. What I do on election day, and I guess everyone has their own election day traditions, but I do, whether I'm on the ballot or not, is I go to each and every one of the 22 precincts I proudly represent and spend some time there greeting voters from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. And yesterday was not a pleasant day to be outside. In fact, starting about 10:30 in the morning, there was this cold, pelting rain that just drenched you to the bone. And I wasn't dressed warmly enough. I did go back eventually and get a raincoat, but only after a few hours out there in the rain. And what I saw was just the kind of thing that makes me proud to be an American. I saw elderly people. I saw a woman clearly in her 90s, frail woman who, her daughter helped out of the car. There's this massive mud puddle. And I tried to help her get on the sidewalk, and she did. She didn't have to vote, but she had to vote. She wanted to vote. She was determined to vote. It didn't matter that it was this cold, pelting, drenching, bone-chilling rain. It didn't matter the mud. It didn't matter that she was frail. She was determined to get to the polls. She was determined to tell Donald Trump what she thought about him. She was determined to tell the Republican Party that she's tired, just tired of all the hatred and division and animosity that they're trying to spread throughout the country. And nothing was going to dissuade this woman from voting, and I helped her every step I could. That's what I saw. I saw people with walkers. I saw people in pain. I saw people come out of sick beds. I saw lines I see in presidential years, and I'm used to seeing lines in presidential years, but I'm proud to say in my home communities of Alexandria and Arlington and the portion of Fairfax County that I represent, I saw lines that were mighty close to presidential years, long lines, people in a governor's race. And why were they voting? Why were they out there voting? Well, I think the reason has to do as much with what they were voting against is what they were voting for. Now, sure, they're voting for Ralph Northam, who's a kindly doctor, ex-military. He cares about children since he's a pediatric neurologist, so he's smart. He deals, and he also has a lot of compassion. He wants Medicaid expansion and, all the things that Ralph Northam won on. And people did vote for that. I voted for that. But they also voted for another reason. They voted because the guy running against Ralph Northam, a guy, a Washington lobbyist by the name of Ed Gillespie, who was former chair of the Republican National Committee, had run ad after ad after ad that demonized people, that showed pictures of brown-skinned immigrants and suggested they were all MS-13, that somehow everyone who was undocumented was some evil, murderous gang member. He showed pictures of the Confederate flag as if that's the greatest issue facing Virginia, particularly after Charlottesville. He showed a child molester, which one of the things that our governor, Terry McAuliffe, had done, has said if you've gone to prison and you've served your time, you should have a right to vote. And this guy had come out of prison. He actually never exercised his right to vote because 40 days later he was found with child pornography, went back to jail. Taking one case out of context, when the Virginia governor had taken hundreds of thousands of people who'd served their time and given them their voting rights back. As if somehow Ralph, by allowing a man to vote, and it wasn't even Ralph Northam, it was Terry McAuliffe, but whatever, somehow supported child porn. As if Ralph Northam somehow supported gang violence. As if this kindly doctor who spent his entire life helping children, many of whom have terminal illnesses, somehow would countenance violence. And, you know, these weren't dog whistles. You know the expression, a dog whistle. A dog whistle is a whistle that's high-pitched enough only a dog can hear it. Usually racism, xenophobia, hatred of foreigners, homophobia, misogyny, hatred of women. Most of these things are done in dog whistles, right? You imply something. Ronald Reagan used to talk about welfare queens. He didn't say black welfare queens. George Bush Sr. had his Willie Horton ads. He would show a black man and then talk about crime. And those are dog whistles. They're gross. They're racist. But they're implicitly racist. Well, Ed Gillespie was explicitly racist. I mean, I don't know how else you glorify the Confederate flag. I don't know how else you talk about immigrants as if they're all MS-13. And Virginia rejected that. Solidly rejected that. And the irony is that it wasn't necessarily even Ed Gillespie's way. I mean, Ed Gillespie was a typical establishment swamp Republican, right? This is a guy who takes money from influence peddlers and makes sure that this big corporation gets a massive tax cut, make sure that our taxpayer money goes to some polluter. That's what his ordinary job was. That's what he does. That's what a lot of Republicans do. You know, how do we get more money to rich people? How do we get more money to the kind of people who give us donations? Typical swamp monster, right? But he thought after the 2016 election that, well, first, actually, even after 2016, he had an opponent, Corey Stewart of Prince William County, who almost beat him because in the Republican Party, these racist appeals have a lot of power. And he barely beat Corey Stewart by 1%. And Corey Stewart was the full Trumpist, full immigrant-hating, women-hating, racist Trumpist. He also was the chairman of the board of Prince William County, which was the county at the center of the Virginia debate, the most purple county in Virginia, right? Where I live, Alexandria, Arlington, solidly blue. Outside of the exurbs, it's rural, it's very red. And Prince William was the purple heart battleground. In fact, currently in Prince William, there are 6 delegates. 1 is a Democrat, and 5 are Republicans. And Corey Stewart was from that county. And given that Corey Stewart almost beat Ed, Ed's like, oh, wait, I got to change my stripes. I got to be more racist. I got to do exactly what George Wallace did when he lost in a primary and then said, I'll never be out and worded again. Right? I got to be more racist. And so he did a complete transformation. He became the full Trump. And he even condemned NFL players for taking a knee. Really? Like, that's the biggest issue facing Virginia, is NFL players protesting against racist police violence. Now, the racist police violence, that's a big issue. But the protests, that's somehow a Virginia issue. So he went full Trump. And he lost. And he lost, as Trump might say, bigly. He lost in a bigly way. He lost big time. because while these things may prevail in a Republican primary, they definitely do not represent the majority of Virginia, just like they don't represent the majority of America. And race that was close, a race where Ralph Northam was winning by 2 or 3 points, a race that made me nervous, broke open. And Northam won by 9 or even 10 points. And the reason he did it is because I think the racists won't come out in the rain like our people will. The people who fight racism, the people who fight misogyny, the people who fight homophobia, we will go out in the bone-chilling rain to defend equality and justice for all, while some of the white supremacists are warm and hiding under rocks, right? We care more than they do. We are more than they are. And this race in Virginia will change the nation. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a Virginian. I know it. The day, last night, right after the race was announced, two Republicans retired from the House of Representatives. And there's going to be a lot more. I predict 10, 20, maybe 30. Getting out of the way before the tidal wave comes across the Potomac and hits Washington as it's going to do in 2018. And all you have to do to see that a real change was made last night is to think about the alternative. What if Gillespie had won? What if these tactics of calling out immigrants and calling out hate, and what if these racist tactics had succeeded? What if the homophobic Bob Marshall had beaten the first transgender candidate, Danica Rome, who did win and is going to become the first transgender state legislator in the country? Very proud of that. But what if hate had won? Well, you know, politicians do what wins. If hate had won, you would have found 100, 200 members, Republicans, in the House of Representatives run these explicitly racist campaigns, anti-immigrant campaigns, homophobic campaigns, misogynist campaigns. They're like, well, racism sells. They would have done what George Wallace did. I won't be out N-worded again. But it didn't succeed. It failed. Virginia showed the nation last night that explicit appeals to racism, explicit appeals to hatred, even just hating on immigrants, is not what America's about. That we Americans recognize in our Statue of Liberty, our proud immigrant past, we recognize that it is the diversity of America that makes us great. And one of the best parts about Ralph Northam's acceptance speech, his victory speech last night, was he said the diversity of America is what makes us great. You don't make America great again by making us white again, or making us one ethnicity again, or one religion again. That would not make us great at all. There's plenty of nations with one ethnicity and one language and one culture, and you know what they are? They're boring, and they're not creative, and they don't have the economic vitality or the cultural vitality that America does. What makes America great? It is precisely the diversity among us. It is precisely the fact that I can go eat sushi and then listen to jazz, and I can, you know, go into a gay bar and come out and have a Finnish sauna. I don't know. It's all these cultures together. That's what makes America great. And Ralph Northam represents the future of America and the future of Virginia. And Virginia, I got to tell you, sometimes we lead the way backward. We know our history. It's just such a pleasure to be in the Commonwealth of Virginia, where we are leading the way forward. The tidal wave has begun, and it's starting to crest. And Washington, watch out. Here we come. 888-48-MARK, 888-48-MARK, 6275, if you want to call in. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. There's still a heck of a lot to talk about as to what happened in Virginia last night. And like I said, if I sound a little tired, it's because, well, I've had 5 hours sleep in 3 days. But maybe the single most exciting moment of the night was the delegate race, the one that, well, all the national media was talking about, between the single most homophobic and transphobic member of the Virginia House of Delegates, Bob Marshall, who'd been representing his district for 25 years and was the author of the Virginia's bathroom bill, the same bill that pretty much that was in North Carolina and constantly anti-gay, anti-trans bills, was beaten by Danica Rome, the first transgender woman, first transgender person in the United States of America to win a state legislative seat and to be seated. Now, this was, you know, good and evil, right? This was a classic thing. This was the most homophobic guy and the first in the country. And, you know, I got a little pride for Virginia. Sorry, Massachusetts. Sorry, Vermont. Sorry, California. We get the first transgendered person in the United States. Ha ha. Y'all got to step up. Step it up. But she didn't win because she's transgender. Nope. Danica Rome won because she's a journalist. She lived her entire life in that district, and she was tired of the traffic on Route 28. And all her signs said, get rid of traffic on Route 28. And she understood that the people of her district care more about getting out of traffic than they do about Bob Marshall's hate. Well, after Bob lost, his sister sent out a tweet, and my wonderful thanks to Kathleen Joshua, who actually is not just listening now, but is a constituent of mine. Love you, Kathleen. Sent me just now, happened 30 minutes ago, she sent me Bob Marshall's sister's tweet. Paula Marshall Nucci writes, and I quote, "That was my brother, who lost his seat in the House of Delegates race in Virginia. He wouldn't debate her. He wouldn't call her or she. Maybe if he weren't so judgmental and homophobic, he could have lost with dignity. I'm not happy my brother lost his job, but all I can say is karma, brother." I just want to let that sink in. I want to let it sink in. Paula Marshall Nucci, I love you. I want to meet you. I want to thank you. You have put your principles above even your blood. You show that even in the most homophobic and bigoted of families, there are good people who don't agree. That's why we shouldn't put everyone in one category. Bob Marshall had his weirdness, his bigotry, but you don't share it. Thank you for that tweet. Thank you for letting us know that there are good people all around. It's you and people like you that won Virginia last night. It's you and people like you that are going to win back the country. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this. In addition to the landslide victory in Virginia, which I still haven't finished telling you about yet, of course, New Jersey had a statewide race as well, and as expected, the Democratic governor, a candidate for governor, won there. That wasn't surprising. And Democrats won some seats in New Jersey. But there were some surprising seats that were won. There were seats that were run in very red, very conservative districts. In fact, there was a Republican New Jersey official named John Carman who, at the Women's March, put up a meme of a woman in the kitchen and the message, quote, "Will the women's protest be over in time for them to cook dinner?" unquote. Well, there was a woman in his district at the march who didn't take kindly to that meme and decided to run against him because of it. Her name is Ashley Bennett. And last night, she defeated him. Oh, good, good, good. good to see all this. The scope of the victory, I have to tell you, is amazing. It's not just that we won governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general. I actually thought we were going to win those. I was nervous, but I thought we were going to win the statewide races. It's not just that we picked up seats in the House of Delegates. I thought we would pick up seats. Didn't know whether it'd be 2 or 4 or 6 or 8. I did say if it was over 10, I would be ecstatic. It was way over 10. There are 34 Democrats currently in the House of Delegates. Based on election returns last night, we have 50 seats. We have exactly half the House of Delegates. Now, the House of Delegates is gerrymandered to favor Republicans. And notwithstanding that gerrymander, we have 50 seats. Now, recounts are ongoing. We might lose a seat. We might go down to 49. We might gain a seat. We might go up to 51 and actually have the majority. I don't know where those recounts will lead. But it's safe to say that 24 hours ago, no one expected Democrats to get 10 seats, much less 16 seats. You know, 5, 6, that kind of stuff. It was an amazing night. Okay, I know I have a lot of you on the phone, and I want to get to y'all. Oh, one more thing before I get to you. One last thing, and this is important. This is a tweet by Reed Shaw, who I'm trying to figure out what organization he works for. Anyway, he apparently examined the numbers and saw that what built up Ralph Northam's campaign so much, the governor, was reverse coattails. Do you know what coattails are? Political coattails are the president or some high official runs, and then people win based on their coattails. For example, I have no doubt that many of our victories in Virginia, as much as we put a lot of hard work into them, were because of Donald Trump. Donald Trump had negative coattails. Because of Donald Trump, we won a lot of House of Delegates seats last night. I know that's true. But usually coattails are positive. When President Obama runs, people run with him and they do well. But usually a coattail is when a high-ranking official helps a lower-ranking official gain public office. Well, last night we saw something called reverse coattails. Pretty rare. But if this guy's done analysis, Reed Shaw, of the various precincts, Democratic precincts, Republican precincts, precincts in Virginia, and found that in races where no Democrat ran, non-competitive races, and there were some 13 Republicans that didn't have a challenger, there were some 23 Democrats that didn't have a challenger. I didn't have a challenger. But where Republicans were unchallenged, the Democratic vote this year was the same as the Democratic vote in prior years. But when there was a Democratic challenger, there was an increase in turnout of 20%. It's called reverse coattails. So don't tell the Republicans this, but a dirty little secret to how to win statewide elections is run lots of candidates, even in races they're probably not going to win. They will get their friends to the polls, and that helps the statewide candidate. It also, by the way, helps build a bench for the future. Very, very important point. Thank you for sharing that. All right, let's get to your calls because I got a bunch of you on the phone, and I want to get to as many of you as I can. Tamara, line 5, Joplin, Missouri. Oh, line 4, sorry. Hey, Tamara, how are you?
Congratulations, Mark. Congratulations,
Thank you. It's a huge deal.
And I've got numbers.
Okay, give me numbers.
We have flipped 14 House seats. In New Jersey, we have flipped 11 Senate district seats. And in New Hampshire, we have flipped 4 this year, and one of those was a dark red GOP stronghold.
Yep, we're doing it.
In New Jersey, Vin Gopal is the first Indian American to be voted in as a state senator.
Good for her. That's fantastic. But, you know, if we're going to brag, we not only have the first transgendered person in Virginia, we have the first lesbian woman in Virginia. In fact, there were just 2 of us in the LGBT caucus in the House of Delegates. We've just doubled our caucus because we're now at 4. We have the first 2 Latina candidates. We've had Latino men, but the first 2 at once, 2 Latino women, Hala Ayala, Elizabeth Guzman, are there. We have the first Asian American woman in Kathy Tran. We have veterans. We have people like a former TV personality, Chris Hurst, who tragically lost his fiancée to a horrific act of gun violence. He's there. We've got an amazing group of people from all walks of life. We've got nurses, we have social workers, veterans. It's just it's a tremendous crop of candidates. We're very, very proud of the diversity we have. We have young people, we have people in their 20s. I forgot the biggest and most important statistic of all. Of the 16 winners, 11 are women. 11 of the 16 are women. And if we win one more, which we might win Shelly Simon's district, 12 of 17, two-thirds will be women. And
women were a huge blue wave last
They were. And in fact, if you look at the statistics, women voted 60% for Ralph Northam. Men voted for Ed Gillespie. Thank God for women. They're the reason we won last night.
I was really worried because of the Donna Brazile book. I mean, the media and the Republicans.
You know what, Aldi, it did a thing. There are a few people on the far left that were watching that kind of stuff. I think most of us just said, Donna, I know you want to sell a book. Can't you wait till after the election? I'll tell you, Donna Brazile and some on the far left are always trying to divide the Democratic Party. They focus on the 2 or 3% of things we disagree on because we're human. We don't agree on everything. And they don't focus on 90% of things we do agree on. We all agree that health care is a right, not a privilege. We all agree that we should protect the environment and not pollute it. We all agree that working people should be able to get a raise in the minimum wage. We agree on climate change. We agree on treating everyone equally under the law. We agree on being pro-choice. We agree on so many things that these little points where we disagree, and there's some who try to bring those things out. This is what the Russians did, by the way. They try to bring out where we differ in order to magnify our differences, and that leads to a disunified party, and that leads to losses. Frankly, I think there's some who voted for Bernie Sanders in the 2016 that didn't vote for Hillary. And one reason we know that is that if you look at the Green Party candidate, Judith Stein, she got more votes than the margin of victory of Trump over Hillary in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. If these 100,000 or so people who voted for the Green candidate couldn't see that Hillary Clinton was better on 95% of the issues they care about than Donald Trump, well, they brought us Donald Trump. So I think that unity...
Hatchet...
Go ahead.
Hatchet Publishing is who published Donna Brazile's book.
Is that the name of it?
That's the name of her publisher.
Well, that should tell you something.
And you know what? I will never buy another one of their books because they were trying to do a hatchet job on the Democratic Party by releasing it right before the election.
Yeah, I think Donna Brazile has a right to say whatever she wants to say. It's free speech in this country. But the fact that it came out a week before the election, and I don't know whether Donna approved that or not, but she shouldn't have allowed it. She should have said, all right, I want to make my story, wait till after the election. And I'm sorry, Donna.
Publishers have the right to do that.
Well, she should have made it clear that they couldn't. Hey, Tamara, thanks for your call. I appreciate it.
Did not do a hatchet job on the Democrats. Woo-hoo!
Yep, nope, they sure didn't succeed. All right, let's go. We got a bunch of other people on the line. Reggie, line 3 in Georgia. Hey, Reggie, go ahead.
Happy hump day to you, Mark Levine.
Hey there.
Well, I'm glad that everything turned out the way that it did, because I know that it's freaking out conservative hate talk radio.
Oh, absolutely. They don't know what to do. I honestly believe that Donald Trump hit the high water mark a week ago, and it's all downhill from here. This is the beginning of the end of Donald Trump. I really believe that. I think Republicans are going to see he's toxic and start to run away.
Well, what's taking them so damn long to get rid of him or to get him out?
Well, you know, they have a political problem. Now, there are a few with integrity. Some of them do have integrity. John McCain, Jeff Flake, Bob Corker, and they distanced themselves a little late, frankly. They probably didn't have enough integrity, but they had some, and they distanced themselves finally. But for the run-of-the-mill Republican congressman who has no integrity and just wants to get reelected, he or she has a problem. Usually it's a he, if it's a Republican. He's got a problem because he wants to distance himself from this narcissistic maniac, to use Ralph Northam's words, talking about Donald Trump. But at the same time, he knows that half his population, half the Republican base, strongly supports this racist, xenophobic nightmare. And so they try this balancing act. That's exactly what Ed Gillespie tried to do. He tried to balance. He tried to say, I won't have Donald Trump campaign with me, but I'll still use his racist, his anti-immigrant rhetoric. And what Virginia showed last night is that you can't do that. You can't balance anymore. You can't pretend to be racist and non-racist at the same time. You can't be pro-Trump and anti-Trump at the same time. You try to balance and you fall off.
Right.
And I think they're going to have to make some choices, and that's why I think you're going to see a bunch of them retire. I really do.
Right. I'm glad that it's also freaking out Fox News Channel, too. How's that going for them? Not so well, I'm afraid, right?
You know, I watched a little bit of Fox News to see what they would say, and they talked a lot about Korea.
They talked a lot about Korea, not the election
yesterday. Right, right.
You know what
right.
else they did? This was pretty embarrassing. They just played highlights of people reacting to a year ago, the election of Trump, and like an anniversary.
You know, I think they tried so hard to put their people in a bubble where they can't find real news and they can't. That's amazing stuff. Thanks for your call, Reggie. I appreciate it. Let me go to Julian on line 5 in my hometown of Alexandria. Hey, Julian, how are you?
Hey, Mark, fantastic. Hey, now listen here. You're a modest guy. What you didn't say was that here we are in true blue Alexandria, and you're our beloved delegate, and you worked so hard for the campaign for 51, and you raised a lot of money to help those candidates. So thank you
very much. And not only did I raise that money, I spent it all.
You actually spent it. Yeah, you
did it at a party. Yeah, I tell you, I looked up. So there's 50 now delegates in the Virginia House of Delegates, including the delegates-elect. And I spent so much that I'm now one of the poorest three. I gave it all away. I gave it all to delegates who needed it. I know that I was running unopposed. I didn't need the money, but I knew that people like, you know, Danica Rome and Elizabeth Guzman and Chris Hurst and David Reed, all I knew they needed the money. In fact, we did a last minute with Kelly Fowler, a television buy that put her over the top. So thank you for thanking me, Julian.
I want to say a special thanks to Tom Perriello for really stepping up to the plate. And I also want to recognize that yesterday at his victory speech, the first guy that Ralph Northam thanked was his driver.
Yeah, Seth.
And friend Seth. I thought that shows the kind.
He's a nice guy. He's a nice guy. If those of you who've met Ralph know, he's a kind person. It, frankly, he's... I worried when he ran for office, I'll be blunt, I worried he was too nice. I used to tell people, I'm afraid he's too nice. He's so genuine and so warm and so friendly that I feared that he would let the Republicans walk all over him. And in fact, initially when they did a lot of those tough ads, I encouraged him to respond. I'm glad he finally did. But his heart, he's got a heart of gold, and I think he's going to be a great governor.
Okay.
Thanks for your call, Julian.
Hey.
Let me go to another Alexandrian. My constituents are all calling in today. Kurt on line 2. How are you, sir?
Hey, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm all right.
To say congratulations. I know you were out campaigning really hard, and
I was.
You know, for someone
in the rain.
For the other side on this occasion, I just wanted to say congratulations. It was a well-earned victory for your side.
Well, thank you. I think we wanted it more, to be honest with you. Now, to be fair, that happens in Virginia a lot. Generally, in fact, for 44 years. In every single race except one, and the exception was Terry McAuliffe, whoever won the presidency, the other side won the governorship. And it was this thing. Whenever Republicans won the presidency, the Democrats won the governorship and vice versa. I think that a lot of it was anger against Trump. But I also think, and I think, Kurt, you may well agree with me on this, that Ed Gillespie's campaign did not do him that good, that he didn't focus on jobs or the economy or... his focus was on all these, you know, going after immigrants and things, and I don't think that played well in Virginia. I don't know. You disagree?
I'll certainly agree that trying to become Trumpian or Trumpian light was a mistake. I think Trump has not been good for the conservative movement or the Republican Party. I think there's a lot of policy disagreements on which we can have very honest debates, and I think that him trying to swing that way was not in his interest. And I genuinely hope that this will cause the Republican Party to reevaluate and go back to some of these core policy issues where we can have a substantive discussion.
I hope so, too. And by the way, I love substantive discussions among Republicans. I'm wonky that way. I'm kind of a nerd that way. I may disagree. I may well disagree, but I want to know the details of their tax policy,
You and I, Kurt, have talked about guns a lot. I recognize people may disagree, but name-calling and this racism and this kind of, oh, well, I guess Ralph Northam supports child molesters. Well, obviously, Ralph Northam doesn't support child molesters. Don't make such an accusation. Of course he doesn't.
No, that rhetoric is not helpful. You know,
it really
isn't. I think about rhetoric and policy and substance stuff like this, and I think the rhetoric was really bad. And
I think it's one of the reasons you lost.
It should be very interesting in January come Lobby Day. It should be, especially if you guys pick up that 51st seat, it should make Lobby Day a lot more challenging, but I look forward to it as I do every year.
Well, thanks, Kurt. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate it. We're going to take another break. 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. When we come back, I'm going to talk about the future of Virginia, the future of the United States, and what this victory really means for all of us. Right back after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. I don't know whether we're going to end up flipping 15, 16, or 17 seats in Virginia's House of Delegates this year, but I do know, based on the trusty research of my producer, Mark Grimaldi, that it is the largest we have flipped since 1899. I was going to say if we flipped 10 or 11 or 12, it was the largest since Watergate. We haven't had more than 3 or 4 seats since Watergate when we flipped 13 seats, but we've already gone past that. To the largest since 1899. And dirty little secret, the Democratic Party in 1899 was not a progressive party. It was a profoundly racist conservative party that wanted Jim Crow laws. So it's nice that we've reclaimed the Democratic Party. We got Old Faithful Michael from the Bronx. He's been patiently waiting. Line one, how are you, sir?
Hey, Mark. In the words of Jackie Gleason, rest his soul, and as sung by James Taylor, I want to stop and thank you, people. I just want to stop.
Okay.
And thank you, people.
Well, I do want to thank everyone because I got to tell you something. People work so hard.
For this victory.
I'll tell you something. It was the voters in the rain. It was also the activists. Oh, my God. I had a whole team of activists. I had a city of activists. Alexandria had elected every Democrat in Alexandria, and they went to go, and they went to Loudoun, and they went to Prince William, and they canvassed, and we would send busloads of people to help various delegates, and in Alexandria, they registered people to vote, they went door-to-door, they canvassed door-to-door, they made phone calls. People worked hard for this. These victories don't just happen. It's not like, oh, let's just have an election and these things happen. It requires time. It requires money. It requires shoe leather. It requires people who care a lot. So
I extend your thank you, Mark,
to everyone who helped. Yeah.
But you know something else is that we've been talking about 2018 and 2020 as pretty much goal years. But when we looked at who was up for 2017, and we had not one, not two, but at least three contenders that had a support and or alliance for Trump, we knew.
We knew they'd lose. I'm running out of time, Michael. One last thing, though. Terry McAuliffe, you watch. I bet he's running for president, and this really helped him. This is Mark Levine. Talk to you on Monday.